originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Happy to have you with us on Sirius 219 XM, Channel 206, and for everyone streaming us worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. Happy to have you with us as well as we get set for another very special hour here on the program. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, along with the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld. Our producer, Lee Delapina, is back in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. And we are taking the show on the road again today as we are set up just outside of barn number 7. That's the Saratoga barn of trainer Kieran McLaughlin. And looking forward to this visit with Kieran here tonight, JT.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime you get together with Kieran, it's fun. We go back a long ways, probably longer than we care to admit.
Yes, long ways. Yeah.
Welcome, my friend.
Thank you very much for having me.
Happy to have you on board. You know, you first joined us on this program shortly after we launched the show in 2012. Right. It was actually October of 2012. And since that time, there has been a lot of really positive things that have happened with you and your team. You've won an additional 37 graded stakes races. I don't know if you knew that.
No,
37 graded stakes since 2012. Multiple grade ones, and of course you had the victory in the Breeders' Cup too. So
yes, that's a great run. I like to hear that.
Yeah, we've been good luck for you.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's just been amazing to just see you continue to compete at the highest level, and the longevity, Kieran, is something you have to be very proud of.
Yes, I have a great team of people behind me. My brother Neil and his wife Trish up here at Green Tree, and then they go to Florida, and then Joe Lee has been. Started with me 24 years ago and then was gone to Godolphin for a few years, and he's back at Belmont. And, you know, a lot of people just have been with me for a long time, grooms, exercise riders, and everybody. But the key is the horses. So the Mocktoom family have been the main source of the best horses, and that helps a lot.
You came up under D-Wayne Lucas, and he always talks about his team and how he takes that team approach, a former basketball coach. Sounds like you're doing the same thing.
Yes, it's not anything to do with I, as Wayne would say. There's no I in team. So I definitely need my team of people, and especially with my multiple sclerosis that I deal with daily. I can't saddle. I could maybe saddle, but I can't move out of the way if one rears up. So I'm happy to have people help me with the physical stuff. I'm good mentally, pick all the races for the horses, set up the training schedule for all the horses, and talk about them every day. But, so I need the team.
It's probably good in a way that you have somebody to do the physical stuff because it makes you sharper for the mental stuff. Do you find that to be true?
Yeah, that's true. That helps a lot, too. And I like all the picking the races. It's so much fun because that's a big part of it. And that's great for me. And the training program up here, we have Polytrack, Oklahoma, Turf, Main Track. We have a lot of tracks to talk about every day.
You know, you mentioned your MS, and many people may not realize that you have MS, and to do this job with that disease is pretty remarkable. You had a quote when you joined us, a year or two ago, and I never forgot it. You said, "I may have MS, but MS doesn't have me." I love that.
Yeah, correct. That's the way I live every day, and I deal with it, and it's not a big deal. I mean, I can't golf anymore, and I don't run and play or do much of that, but as far as the golf carts are great for me up here. I don't walk very well. You wouldn't buy me as a yearling off my walk. But I do everything else pretty normally, and I love what I'm doing.
Do you find that this is therapeutic in a way?
Yeah, in a way. Like I said, that's what I said. I don't feel like this is work. I get to come out every day and enjoy the people and the horses. So I love what I'm doing.
It's especially beautiful back here. with the training center and all the options that you have. And we're sitting at a picnic table outside. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
No, and this was Mr. H. Allen Jerkins' barn for years, so it's neat that we're in this barn.
Yeah, what's that mean?
It's just neat that he had so many good horses here, and he was such a legend of the game. I mean, a great man, and now we have a race named after him, Grade One King's Bishop. So it's really neat to be around him. You feel like, you know, he was here for years.
I remember on that first show back in 2012, you talked about how you got started. Being a native of Lexington, Kentucky, you would go to Keeneland and attend the sales just as a fan and a spectator. And I remember you told me that you couldn't believe that there were horses that would sell for $1 million or more. And now you walk down your shed row, Kieran, and you have the privilege of training several horses that have sold for more than that.
Yes, that's true. Yes, I'm living my dream for sure. And I love what I do, and it's great to have great owners supply you with horses that cost a lot and or are well-bred. Homebreds are nice, too.
Do you feel any pressure when you have, like, a $1 million horse and you go out to breeze it or whatever? Is it in the back of your mind?
Yeah, it is, but we put pressure on ourselves for every horse, trying to get the best out of every horse, whether it's a $40,000 one or $4 million. So, you know, and everybody knows that. So we put pressure on ourselves every day to get the most out of each horse.
You didn't come from a horse racing family, though, did you?
No, my best friend was Greg Burchill when we were 10 years old to 15 years old, and his dad owned and then started training. So I fell in love with it at 12 years old, 11 years old, and Greg and I still have some dealings together. He trains a nice horse called Stick Stately Dude that is actually at Churchill right now, but he's pointing for a race up here on the 27th, hopefully, and he'll bring him up here. So we still are in contact often.
How do you manage horses when you have them all over the country like that, or in multiple bases, let's say?
Well, you know, I'm glad you asked that, because some people think we have 200 horses like some of my friends do. But, I mean, we only have 80.
Right.
So it's not, you know, 80 is much more manageable. I'd like it to be a little more, 100 to 120. But we have 40 at Green Tree, 20 here in Barn 7, and 20 at Belmont. So really it's not so difficult. And we use T-Lore, which is great. It keeps all of a track of everything on the internet. Each horse is all of the vaccinations, teeth, shoeing, work schedule, race dates. It has everything. So when I put in a race date, all the assistants know where we're pointing, make sure medication's not an issue, and work schedule's on schedule for that date. So it's a lot easier now with computers and iPads and phones.
Yeah, because Wayne used to have that big board with all the horses listed on it. And
right.
There was a lot of changing around sometimes track to track. But yeah. The T-Lore thing is so cool, because when you do have an operation, you can send a horse anywhere, and your assistant can open that up and see exactly what's been happening.
Correct. And you don't have to worry about the shoeing dates and teeth and worming and all that. It's all there.
Yeah, the medication thing has to be a little tricky, too, especially for somebody like yourself that's running horses in different jurisdictions and different states. That system has to really help. But how conscious are you of that when you're moving horses around over the country?
Yeah, we talk about it daily, and we kind of have a powwow every morning. So we talk about who's running and when, for mostly because of an ACE pill or tranquilizer. We don't want to get too close, and that's the main reason.
Wouldn't it be easier if it was just one set of standards coast to coast?
Absolutely. It would be great. You know, medications, shoeing, claiming rules. Even the starting gate has different rules in each state.
Really? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Some of them will open the front door. Some of them won't. Some of them will let you use a Monty Roberts blanket. Some of them won't. And this really would be great if we were coast to coast like every other sport is, and have, you know, uniform laws and rules. It would be great.
Yeah, that's like saying that Ben Roethlisberger can play in Pittsburgh with a yellow towel on his hip, but if he goes to New England, it has to be a white towel, and if he goes someplace else, it has to be a blue towel. Yeah. I mean, that's how sometimes idiotic these types of things are in horse racing.
Yeah. I know.
And not to mention licensing, too, which is a gigantic issue because you ship – some people are really strict about licensing. Sometimes they'll let you run a horse once on a trainer's license, so to speak.
Right.
So
a temporary license, yeah. Right. Yeah,
what's it like in other countries, Karen? You've been all over the world. It's not the same, is it?
No, it's – you know, if you go to Dubai, all the rules are the same in that country. In England, they're the same. Ireland, they're the same. Japan – They're all the same in the whole country. So we should get there sometime, and that would be great.
What makes it so difficult to do it here in the States?
I think each state wants their say and their racing commissioner and their fees paid. But it would be great if we could do it and get a commissioner also or a czar of racing.
You know, we sat down with Randy Bradshaw on last week's program, and Randy had a ring on his finger that was a Breeders' Cup ring, looked like a high school or a college class ring. And I made a comment to him about it, and he said, you know, that was a special day when Wayne won 3 Breeders' Cup races in one day. And if I'm not mistaken, you have one of those rings too.
Yes, he gave me the Open Mind one because I trained her all the time. And it's a great trophy, and it's really nice. The problem is it shrunk a little bit on me. I didn't know that they would shrink, but over the years, they shrunk a little bit.
Washing your hands too much.
Yeah, right.
Randy's still wearing his.
Yes, he looks great. Yeah, his didn't shrink.
That skinny.
Yeah. Yes. Correct. Yes, it was really neat.
Talk a little bit about that camaraderie between yourself and guys like Randy and Todd and the people who came through that Lucas program. It's just been an amazing training tree.
It is a great team, a great fraternity of Dallas, Mark Hennig, Mike Maker, so many of us. And it was a great team, and we still stay in touch. And I probably stay in touch most with Mark Hennig, my brother-in-law, and Todd because we're on the same circuit most of the time, and our wives are very good friends, and the kids are good friends. So, but it's great. And Randy sends horses to me from Ocala, and I speak to him probably once a month. So it's great to get together every now and then and talk about old times, but it's a great team of people.
It's nice to see, too, that you guys root for one another.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, no issues there.
How about when you beat him? Is that even maybe a little more sweet?
Yeah, it's
especially Randy.
You know, like Todd and I, he runs a lot more than we do, but we're pulling for each other. And when we're in against each other, obviously we're trying to beat one another, but it's easy to root for any of the guys.
How about watching him win the Kentucky Derby again this year? What was that like for
you? It was great. I enjoyed that a lot, and he deserves to win many more. So,
there's one with your name on it, too, somewhere.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
We were close.
Yeah, I know. Been close a couple of times. Fourth twice and a second, but hopefully one day.
It seems like that's the race. I mean, obviously, that everybody wants to win, right? You get into this game, you say, okay, I'd love to win the Kentucky Derby, but it is so difficult to do. What makes it so hard?
You know, just with 20 horses to get there on that day and even have a good, clean trip and the weather be good, and it's very hard to get a horse to qualify now and to even get to be eligible to run. So we've had a couple. One of my best chances was injured 2 weeks before the race in Cairo Prince. But it looks like he's going to be a top stallion, which is nice because I like talking about him because he was so talented. But it's a great race to try and win, and I feel fortunate to have won the World Cup in Dubai for the Maktoums on their home turf, and that doesn't get much better than that. But the Kentucky Derby would be right up there with it.
Yeah, Derby's almost it's like hitting the lotto, really. Yeah, so many things have to go right. But you mentioned Cairo Prince. He had a beautiful colt go through the ring here at Fasig Tipton.
Yeah,
I think it was Tuesday night. Mockmer Hall had just an amazing looking individual. How did you look at him at all?
No, I didn't go to the cell just because I didn't have any orders to go look. But Gatewood Bell and Everett Dobson bought that colt, so there's a chance I could train him. So that's neat because that he is a customer, a client.
That's great.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of advantage when you get a horse that is by a stallion that you trained? Is there any advantage because you kind of are familiar with the family, or does it not work like that?
I'd like to say there is, but there's not really. Maybe I would get something sent to me. That,
all catalog pages are being closed right now.
On the female side, I think sometimes there could be.
Really?
Yes. If you train the mother or brothers and sisters, yes. But as a sire goes, it's, I don't think it's that much. And you know, of an edge.
Yeah, talk about that for a minute. A lot of people, you know, the first thing they say is when you bought a horse, oh, who's he by? You know, but they never ask you who the horse is out of. Yeah. And talk about that for a minute, how important the female side of the...
It's very important. I don't know, you know, a lot of people think it's 75-25, 80-20, but, you know, the mares are very important, and it's neat for us to us trainers to train the offspring of them, because it's just fun that we had them. And we have a cold in Saturday by Tappet for Shadwell out of Lear's Princess, who I trained for Team West Point, and she won a grade one beating Rags to Riches in the Gazelle, and he's trained very well. He might need a race or two because he's by Tappet and there can be a little tricky. He'll run with blinkers, but he's a nice colt, has talent, and that's fun. And then Mohaman was out of Just Whistle Dixie, who I trained for West Point also, and he was by Tappet. So it's neat when you have some of the mares and you get the offspring just because, especially if they're good ones.
You mentioned that horse running with blinkers. How does a trainer know when it's the right time to make an equipment change or an adjustment?
It's interesting for different reasons with your exercise riders, and I rarely run horses with blinkers first time out, but we just noticed that he's just looking around a lot, and like I said, Tappets can be tricky, so we decided to put blinkers on, and he did work much better and stayed focused. Sometimes you put them on because they haven't shown much, but he has shown that he can run.
Have you ever made an adjustment in the morning with a horse like that and said, okay, we're going to try the blinkers, or we're going to take the blinkers off, or whatever it might be? And then afterwards you go, okay, that didn't work. We're not going into the afternoon like that.
Yes, we do that also.
Really?
Yes, that happens. You know, you just have to see. I mean, we have a couple that are bred for the turf right now that we worked at Palmetto's on the turf, and they didn't work well. So we might get to the turf, but I hope we don't, because I hope they, you know, win races on the dirt.
You like training dirt horses better than turf horses?
No, it doesn't really matter that much. Turf horses can be frustrating because raining off. Mm-hmm. And getting in, and Chad Brown. Oh, I mean.
And the trips, yeah, the jocks.
Right. Yeah. And the trips, yeah.
Trainer Kieran McLaughlin, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kieran, we are recording this program the morning of August 10th, and for good reason, because when this show airs, people are listening to it now, it's August 16th, and you're going to be a little bit busy when this show is airing the night of August 16th. You have a special event coming up.
Yeah, it's in the morning, actually.
Oh, it is in the morning. Yeah, okay, I was thinking
like
it was the
it's
night.
A luncheon.
Oh, it's a brunch. Yeah,
yes,
that's right.
Exactly, brunch. The chaplaincy is honoring myself and my wife, Letty, who puts in a lot of time that I don't have to help at all the functions. She's always there for every function to help out, handing out things and helping. But they do it. Unbelievable job behind the scenes. The chaplaincy helps so many people in so many ways. It's a great cause, and to raise money for them is great, because they do, anybody that needs anything on the backside, they reach out to them, and they seem to find them when you don't even know that they needed help. So they're a great organization.
You know, as good as that team has been with your brother Neil by your side and the other members that you kind of touched on earlier in the interview, your wife, Letty, has been by your side for a long time. You married at a young age, and she has a racing pedigree.
Yes.
You touched on earlier, you didn't. But it's been a great team,
yes.
And you've gone down this road together. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, we were first here in 1983, and we weren't married yet. We got married that November, and we've been married since. But she's my, you know, best friend and wife, and she's does a whole lot for the family. And she loves our sport, and she understands the long hours. And she was assistant trainer to her father, John Hennig, her brothers, Mark Hennig. So she has, you know, and her sister, Lisa, works for Judmont. So she's Scott Walker's wife at Judmont. So she has plenty of family in the game and understands it well, and is very supportive of me with my MS and with the family. Our son, Ryan, is 23, and he's graduated Vanderbilt and working in New York City now for Merrill Lynch. And our daughter, Erin, is at the Breeders' Cup for 3 years. So we're doing very well, and everything's going great.
Yeah, it's really nice to have a wife that understands the game, because so many trainers don't, and it's a constant struggle. Like, why aren't you able to go to the picnic on Saturday and that kind of thing? And I know it's a big plus if your wife really knows what racing's all about.
Yeah, and she loves coming to the races and coming out and seeing things. But, yeah, she's very supportive.
Kieran McLaughlin with us on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Kieran, people won't realize, or many people won't, that there was a time that you spent working as a jocks agent, and you had Chris Antley's book. And Chris, of course, left us far too soon. But talk about that time in your life when you were working with Chris.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, Aaron was born in 1991, and I was always moving around with Wayne. We would get 24-hour notice sometimes to go to Kingland from Belmont and go to Gulfstream and move around. So I thought I would not have to move as much being a jocks agent. Little did I know, a year and a half later, I'd be going to Dubai. But it was a great experience working for Chris Antley, very talented rider. We won many grade ones up here at Saratoga, and it was fun. I learned a lot about horse racing and riding races and placing horses while I was an agent. It was a good experience for me.
He was inducted into the Hall of Fame here in Saratoga 2 years ago. Take me back to that day. That had to be special for you.
Yeah, it's special. I was with him for a year and a half. He had other agents with him a long time. It's just sad that he, you know, was no longer here, but very, very talented and a really good guy and smart, and loved to visit with him after every race. He was very educational for me.
Yeah, it's nice when you have that rapport with riders, because sometimes it's a love-hate thing, you know.
Yeah.
You hear the jock agents, oh, this guy's driving me crazy, you know. And then who were we with the other day? Julian Leperoux, you know, was talking about agents and valets and all this stuff, and it was a really interesting conversation to hear the jock's point of view, because you don't hear that often.
Yeah, it's true. It's speaking of him and his agent, Steve Bass and I both worked for Mark Cassie and Tom Albertroni in 1981-82. We were all there together.
Wow. Yeah. Another team, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Steve was a jockey.
No,
that's
kidding.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And
yeah.
Tom.
Wow.
Yeah. Both.
Pretty special.
Yeah, it's good. We're like a big family back here.
Yeah, it really is. And a beautiful setting, too. How about this area that we're in now? Back here at Saratoga, it's kind of set back, it's very quiet, it's very peaceful. We're sitting at a picnic table just outside of your office. Really special.
It is special. The horses do great here too, with the cool mornings, and just beautiful here. We've had great weather this meet, so it's a great place to be. It's a special place, Saratoga.
Do you keep horses here year round or
6 months? We come in May 1st to November 1st.
Probably wouldn't work too well in the middle of January up here in Saratoga.
Correct. It wouldn't work too well.
2 feet of snow on the training track.
Yeah, not necessarily to train, but to like turn out or whatever. Yeah. I didn't know if somebody stayed here. Like,
there's a couple people that have clinics that keep going, but we're at Belmont, so in the winter.
So do you have a kind of a fight amongst the crew who gets to go to Saratoga?
We do a little bit from Belmont, but it works out well.
Yeah. Talk about your time in Dubai. That's such an integral part of everything you've been able to accomplish.
Yeah, 10 years in Dubai was great. I feel very fortunate to have been offered the job to go there as a trainer and work for the Maktoum. Sheikh Mohammed actually hired me, and then Sheikh Hamdan from Shadwell brought me on his team with a lot of horses. So I've been fortunate to train for Shadwell and Godolphin since I went on my own and left Dubai after the 10 years in 2003. I was a little nervous, but I did it because of our children, to raise them in America. I said, my first job in life is a parent. And then we made that decision, Letty and I. And it was a tough one to resign from Dubai and come here and set up. But it's been a great run, and they've been very supportive. But it's more than a job. It's like your career and a family, and you're involved with the Maktoums. We're very fortunate to be involved with them. They're the biggest and best owners in the game.
What's the difference between racing in Dubai and here? What are the biggest differences?
I would say the medication rules. I mean, luckily they race left-handed on the dirt at Nanashima Maidan. They have turf racing, but you had to be very careful for even the littlest things like Burison. You know, you couldn't use, or Panalog, certain even topical ointments you couldn't use. And Butte was a week out, no Lasix. But you learned. It was an eye-opener. A lot of people think you can't run a horse without medication. And when you go elsewhere, you realize that it's no big deal. And that we ran, you know, plenty of races without any medication. But you had to be real careful and aware of it. Otherwise, it was great. First class everything in Dubai. You know, hay, grain, hospital, vets, tracks, racing purses, everything.
Kieran, medication is always such a hot-button topic here in the United States, and it has been for several years now. Which side of the fence do you fall on when it comes to that argument?
It's a big argument with Lasix, and I've run probably as much as anybody in America without Lasix because I was asked to, and we've been successful off of it. Frosted ran his first four races without it. Mohamed won a grade two without it early in his life. And Takoffel, who were running in the Alan Jerkins in 2 weeks, he broke his maiden without it. I would be happy to be without Lasix if everybody is. I don't like to be the only guy in the gate without it, you know, or two horses not running on it. But I know you don't have to have it to race a horse. Not every horse bleeds. And so many times everybody just signs them up for Lasix. So I think horses would recover from races quicker without it, and probably race more often without it. And I'm happy to be without it, but until that gets done, I don't want to be at a, you know, a disadvantage.
Yeah, a horse like Frosted, you mentioned, started his career without Lasix and did very, very well. When you decide to add Lasix, what were the reasons there?
Just a little trace of, you know, blood in his mucus or something in his scope.
Yep.
And so that's when we discuss it with the racing managers and say, you know, it's time we need to put him on Lasix. But I still think we probably would have been okay if no one had it. We can treat him a little bit different or pull their water and do a few things. It worked in Dubai. We had some that bled a little bit. We weren't able to give them Lasix. They performed very well.
You mentioned the name Takoffel. I'm just wondering if you actually know what all of those names mean in English when they come to you, all those different Arabic names that Godolphin uses.
It's Shadwell that uses them.
Shadwell
uses them, and that's his language. So Rick Nichols and his secretaries will come with the meaning if they get good enough that we're asking. So Takoffel is how Sheikh Hamdan says it. Takoffel. Takoffel is what we read, but he said Takoffel. And I'm not sure exactly what the meaning is, but hopefully we'll be finding out more after the King's Bishop / Alan Jerk, because that's where we're running.
You get the meeting after the grade one.
Right. Yeah. That would be great. Yeah.
He's Kieran McLaughlin. He's our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. We're going to get to a short break. When we come back, we're going to look at some of the top horses that have gone through Kieran's barn over the years, and there are so many. We'll try to do it in the next half hour. We're back with more Kieran McLaughlin on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.
The inaugural Fasig Tipton Turf Showcase takes place Sunday, September 10th in Lexington, Kentucky. An exciting addition to the Fasig Tipton sales calendar, the Turf Showcase is the only yearling sale in North America exclusively for horses with turf appeal. Did you know that nearly 7,000 races were run on turf in North America in 2016? And more than 40% of graded stakes this year will be turf races. The demand is growing, so don't miss your chance to buy a yearling with true turf appeal. Sunday, September 10th in Lexington, Kentucky. Visit FasigTipton.com.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pin hooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross Lyon, what a finish to the contest.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm, dedicated to the dream.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Upstart and Blofeld anchor down in front as they come to the top of the stretch. It is anchor down joined on the outside by Frosted. And Frosted has gone on by and he has exploded. He is absolutely blowing his competition away. Oh my goodness, look at Frosted today. Frosted's 10 in front. Frosted is absolutely wrapped in the Met Mile. He was wrapped up in a final time of 1 minute 32.73 seconds. Anchor down, Upstart, and Means Flatter. They were a mile behind him.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, our special guest, Kieran McLaughlin, and we are here in Saratoga, just outside of his Saratoga barn. And what a memory that was. Frosted just annihilating the field in the Metropolitan Handicap, the Met Mile, back in 2016. It was a very special moment for Kieran and for his team. And you don't see those kind of performances every day in thoroughbred racing. But luckily, Kieran has had the privilege of being part of many memorable moments. And we'll continue this visit momentarily right after we remind you that if you missed any portion of the program, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, a podcast of this show. All of our Trainer Talk shows available for you to listen to. Horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. A mile in front of the rest.
I love
Larry Colmus, great call.
Yeah, and those performances come along once in a lifetime. We've had some big performances, but that one had to be number one of all times. The way he did it was just incredible.
What's it like watching your horse do that?
I know, it was just like he called the race, the way he called it. It was incredible to watching it, and he just went on by him and just kept going, and it was just, you know, for such an important race. Grade one, dropping back to a mile, you know, it just was very rewarding for everybody and fun.
Yeah, was that like the most surreal you've ever had a horse run?
Yeah, probably it was. I mean, we've had some big performances, but nothing like that. Two other ones maybe come to mind, and that would be Key of Luck in 1996, I want to say, in a race called the Duty Free in Dubai. The same night Cigar won the World Cup, we won the Duty Free, which was on the same surface 30 minutes before, and they've switched it now to the turf. But when the first year, we won by 21 lengths, and he ran a tenth of a second faster than Cigar. And the next day, Sheikh Mohammed called me up, and all three brothers were there, Sheikh Hamdan, Sheikh Maktoum, and Sheikh Mohammed. And he asked me, why didn't you run in the World Cup? And I said, because he wasn't nominated and eligible. I just got the horse in January from another trainer, and he had always been a sprinter, and no one nominated him. You couldn't supplement at that time, and it all changed after that. And he said, how do you think he would have done? I said, well, I have a lot of respect for Cigar and Soul of the Matter. We would have definitely been 1-2-3, but I don't know if we would have beat Cigar, because he just had his ways of getting there first.
You said there were two other moments. What was
other one? I would say Questing up here for the Alabama was incredible and ran really fast. And then, obviously, Invasor in the World Cup to win that race is probably the most gratifying and sad. It's just a huge race to win with Sheikh Hamdan sitting on the couch watching the race.
How about his performance in the Don Handicap?
Yes.
Right? And Larry Colmus again, how good is Invasor?
Yeah.
That performance that day, he had all kinds of trouble, almost went down at the top of the stretch.
And Aaron, my daughter, was with me, and I turned to her and said, we can't win from there. I was so happy I was wrong.
Yeah, it happens sometimes.
Yes.
But, when you train a horse that's, you know, good, and you know they're good, but then they do something like that steps out of any dimension. You know, it was kind of like Arrogate's race here.
Yes.
You know, and the Travers was like out of body experience for me.
Yes.
And that when you train one that does something like that, it's got to be just ridiculous.
Yeah, Frosty was coming off a subpar performance in Dubai, and then to come back here and run like that was incredible. You know, back at, like I said, at a mile, but Neil and his team back here at Green Tree was training right-handed on the poly to prep for the race. So it was a fabulous team effort.
How good was Invisor?
He was the best horse I've ever trained and been around until Frosted came, and I'd put them 1 and 1A. But Invisor was just, he only lost once for us, and he only lost once, I think, in his life. He was 5 for 5 before we got him, and we ran him, and he finished fourth in the UAE Derby as a Southern Hemisphere 3-year-old. And I think Discreet Cat won the race. And then from there, he came back and won, never was beat. And he just, I felt like, just put him in a gate. He knew where the wire was. He was very close here winning the Whitney 1 year by this far. But he was a special horse, and Fernando Haro was lucky to pick up the mount. Ramon Dominguez won the Pimlico Special on him, and he was holding the race, the Suburban, July 1st that year. And he had to go to California for Grand Motion. And Steve Rushing said to me the next year, he said, "Don't tell anybody I took off the horse of the year." but Fernando won on Jazzle the Derby like June 10th. And we needed a rider like a week later. And Rick Nichols said, "Why not Fernando?" I said, "No problem. We can get him." So that's how he ended up on it.
Wow. Do you remember the first time you laid eyes on Invisor?
Yes, I do. And I wasn't impressed.
Really?
He was pretty straight up and down in front and looked a little light from shipping and came into Florida. And we didn't think that much of him at first. And then he started working with a few decent 3-year-olds, and he worked with them always. But we were a little concerned that where do you go with a horse that's won 5 races out of 5? No condition.
Yeah.
And he was older. He wasn't allowed to run in the derbies because he was 4 from Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, pretty remarkable. You mentioned Jazzle. Tell me the story of Jazzle.
Well, he was a neat horse that ended up winning the Belmont. He came flying to be 3rd in the Wood Memorial, 2nd, 3rd in the Wood Memorial to get into the Derby. I think it was 3rd. And he ran in the Derby, drew the 1 hole. Sheikh Hamdan came to America to watch him run. And he finished 4th, dead heated with brother Derek. And then we gave him the 5 weeks to the Belmont, and he won the Belmont. It was a great ride, and Fernando Haro, he blew his iron coming out of the gate, hit the side of the gate, and then he came and he won the race, and it was a huge race for all of us, and you know, to win an American Classic. We didn't go on much after that, but he did win the Belmont.
Yeah, that's one thing about training racehorses, and Jude, you know it as good as anybody. You put all this time and effort into it. You can do everything right. They get into a race, and it's out of your hands, and you can't control things like a rider coming out of his irons or clipping heels and things right. like that. That has to be a little frustrating, though, isn't it?
Yeah, you have to just try and get the best available professional jockey and hope for the best. And sometimes I think I've had 4 jockeys win their first grade 1 in their life for me, and it's kind of neat. Irad Ortiz on Questing, and Alan Garcia won his first grade 1 horse, Rajiv Mirage on Dickinson's Mother, Little Bell at Kingland, and Fernando Haro. So 4 of them winning their first grade 1. You have to give them a chance to ride the grade 1 horse in the grade 1 races and not take the kids off because they're young kids, and let them have a chance. So that's kind of neat that we've done that.
That's very admirable. You know, most trainers are always worried about their owners second-guessing them or whatever, and I guess part of your luxury is that you have owners that understand the game and know you really well and trust your opinion. But, you know, I always tried to give people a shot and a lot of times second-guessed for it, but I always stuck to my guns because I think it's so important. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever going to be the next grade 1 winner unless somebody gives them a shot.
Exactly, correct. And the guy we spoke about early, Alan Jerkins. He did it often.
All the time.
Yeah. He didn't want those millionaire jockeys, he said. They might not try as hard as the one that needs it more.
There's something to be said for that. Was that true?
Yes, yes.
Really?
Yeah, he had a lot of different jockeys win a lot of races, even exercise riders.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a young kid that's just coming up, he's going to be, well, you would expect that he's going to be hungrier than somebody who's in the Hall of Fame that's won 4,000 or 5,000 races, right? Is there some truth in that?
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, sometimes it's weird how it goes. I mean, I have a couple of horses here for Zilla, and we tried to reach out and get Jose Ortiz or Javier Castellano, and we got them, and the horses didn't run as well as for Eric Cancel. So Eric's riding most of them now because they just have we have good vibes with him.
He's a good jockey.
Yeah, he is. A young kid, 20 years old.
Yeah,
I hope I can find a grade one to put him on.
I'm betting.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny, too, because as the jocks get older, they get wealthier, they take more wide trips. You know, it's kind of a young man's game to a certain degree. Yeah. Then there's the other side
of the
coin.
Unless you're Mike Smith.
Mike Smith, but he gets off the couch and rides 45 horses a year, you know. But I mean, the young guys, you know, they want to win those races. They've never won them. That's their big dream. The older guys, you know, I've won this race 5 times. You know, I'm not going to get dropped by that yo-yo up there. And there's that attitude. Then there's the experience thing.
Yes.
Go back to Airgate when he got left in Dubai.
I know.
And Mike Smith, after the race, I was blown away by the comment. I just decided I'd ride him like Zenyatta.
Yes.
So the only guy in the world that could do that was Mike Smith.
Right.
So you got Eric Cancel. I love Eric Cancel. I think he's a very talented kid. But he's never ridden Zenyatta, and he's not going to have that presence of mind. He's going to go, what the hell do I do now?
Right. It's been a little bit of a just unlucky for Javier and Jose that the race shape came up different for those guys on that day. But Eric has done very well with Celtic Chaos. He's won 3 in a row and a few others. So it's kind of neat.
As Eddie Dalhousie used to say, he needs to eat too.
Correct. Right.
Kieran, when people think about the best trainer that they've ever seen, there will be people that are going to bring up your name. And they're going to say, hey, Kieran is the best at what he does for whatever reason. How about in your opinion, who's the best trainer that you have ever seen?
Now, that's a good question. I mean, I'm going to say in the heyday of Wayne Lucas, when he was getting the best of horses, no question that he did. He was so organized, and he bought a lot of them, so he picked them out, and he just did so well. I would have to say Wayne, and now Todd Pletcher would be the current one. I feel like, you know, a lot of people say he has so many horses, but to get 6 horses eligible to get in the starting gate on the first Saturday in May is not easy, but he does a great job and has a lot of great help to do it with. I would hire him as my trainer if I need it to this day, right now.
That's a great endorsement.
Yeah.
You know, but I think you're right. I think a lot of people, you know, knocked Todd for a while. It was like, oh, he's only won one Derby out of, you know, 45.
Only one.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Only one, first of all. And then second of all, out of 45, that means he got 45 horses in the starting gate. And that's what his clients charge him with, right? It's his job to get the horse to the Derby. There's only one Derby winner every year. And it's not always going to be Todd Pletcher, even if he runs the first 6 favorites.
Getting there, he won grade ones or million-dollar races for those clients.
Right.
Getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what people don't understand, I think, sometimes.
I think maybe you have to be a trainer or an ex-trainer like myself to realize how hard it is.
Or at least in the business, to some degree, to understand how difficult it is just to get a horse to the start, just to get a horse to the races is a major accomplishment.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I came close one time, you know, in 20 years.
Right.
And I was lucky to come close. Yeah. Some guys never even, leave Charlestown.
Right. Right.
So it's fantastic.
Yeah, and Kieran, I'm not asking you to name any names here, but there are times in a trainer's career where they get, especially in your situation, a very expensive horse that comes into their care, right, because of the clients that you work with, and it happens with a lot of the big-time trainers. It doesn't guarantee success. I've told many people outside of racing this, they'll say, this horse costs $1.2 million. He has to be really good. Doesn't always work that way.
Not at all. You get lucky, like a Mohaman was a sell topper, and he won his first 5, and then we've gone the wrong way since, and he's going home soon. But you have to treat them all as individuals and train them a little different if you have to. Some are turf, some are dirt, and some are short, some are long. But you hope and dream, like the owners that paid the big dollar for them, that they're Derby horses, but it's hard to get there.
When you look back into the early stages of your career, and there are so many great stakes winners, but you see names like, say, Dumani and Allied Forces and Soviet Line and Intadab. There were a lot of really good horses that helped get you started and get you rolling. Look back on some of those.
Yeah, Dumani was a really interesting horse that we got from Europe into Dubai for Sheikh Hamdan, and he was doing real well in Dubai, and I asked him to take him to Japan, and Sheikh Hamdan allowed us to go there, and he won the Keio High Spring Cup, 7 furlongs, and it was $1.5 million the race was. But the fun part of it was I came out to the paddock, and I looked at the tote board, and I asked the man from JRA, what does that tote board say? And he said, you're 59.8-1. And I said, wow, where does a man bet? You're not allowed to bet, sir. You can't bet. As a trainer, I wasn't allowed to bet. But I'd never seen a decimal in the odds. And I don't think I'd run many that were 60-1. Well, we went upstairs to watch the race, and I did not bet, and he won the race.
But oh, wow.
It was a big purse. And then he came back and won the Shadwell Mile twice. But it wasn't called the Shadwell Mile. It was the Kingland Mile prep for the Breeders' Cup. So those were great memories. A Soviet Line was a proven grade one horse when I got him. And Allied Forces was a young horse also from Europe. And we were pointing for the Kentucky Derby with him. But he was turf. But we won on Derby Day on the turf at Pimlico. And then we ran back in 2 weeks in the Preakness, but we didn't do well. We tried the dirt and then went back to turf. And he was a really nice horse.
Was there a single moment in your career that you can point to and say, this is the moment where everything got started and launched me to a new level?
I would have to say the day I went to work for Wayne Lucas. It just was, you know, a great time. And Keen Dangerfield, when I was 19 years old, I took my trainer's test in Lexington. And Keen Dangerfield told me, son, you did real well. You passed this trainer's exam. He said, what are you going to do with this trainer's license? I said, well, sir, I have a good friend, Alvin Haynes, and another friend of his going to give me a couple horses. I'm going to train at Latonia or the training center in Paris Pike. And he said, let me give you a little piece of advice. He said, go to work for the biggest outfit you can go to work for and learn at a different level and meet the people at a different level. If you go to Latonia and train, you're going to be stuck there the rest of your life trying to train for cheaper than the guy next door, and you'll have only claiming horses your whole life, no matter how good a trainer you are. And that was a great piece of advice, and I worked my way from Mark Cassie to Wayne Lucas the next few years, and that was the biggest break to Wayne, and then obviously to Dubai.
Compare Mark Cassie to Wayne Lucas in terms of their philosophy and their style. They both had so much success.
Yeah, Mark, at that time, I only had 3 horses for him. I came up here in 1983 for him. But Mark is a very positive thinker like Wayne. He treats each horse as an individual, and he does a great job. He has really put himself on the map the last few years. But we had a lot of fun, good guy, serious, worked hard, both of them. I mean, they were work all day if they had to. And Norman, his son, is neat because I remember when he was born, I was working for Mark. So it's neat to see him now. He's a really good man and a good assistant. But Mark was great, too, to learn from at that time. I was very young, but I learned a lot from him as well.
Wayne told us a great story last year about when you went to work for him, and he told you to be there at 4 a.m, so you got up at 3 and showed up at 3:30. Wayne was already at the barn. I said, where you been?
I couldn't figure out what you do at 3:45 in the morning, so I didn't want to be late. We actually met at the donut shop, and he was ready to walk out, and I thought I was early. But he's still that way, Wayne. I mean, he just up and at it early and go, go, go. So we're not quite as early, but we go every day.
Well, when I met him, he was you know, he had horses in New York, he had horses in the Midwest, and he was in California, so he had to get up early to talk to the assistant in New York and all that. And with that board, I used to love that board, and I'd go in his office some days because he was stabled down the road from me, and I'd go in his office and just sit there and listen to him talk.
Yes.
Two guys that I love to listen to talk, Wayne and John Gosden. I learned more just sitting in a chair in their office than you could learn in a lifetime from those two
right.
guys.
And I love listening to Charlie Whittingham, but we didn't get to listen to him that much because he was always on the go.
Right.
But a great trainer, too.
Talking with Kieran McLaughlin here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Don't forget, if you miss any portion of the show, head on over to horseracingradio.net and check out the podcast of this show and all of our Trainer Talk programs. Kieran, another name that comes to mind is Henny Hughes, who you had, and boy, what a good horse he was.
Yeah, a really neat horse. We got him. He finished second in the Breeders' Cup as a two-year-old, and then he went to Dubai, and then they sent him back. And we trained him, and we were pointing for the King's Bishop then, and we were going to run the Amsterdam early in the meet. And then we ran the Jersey Stakes, the Jersey Shore Stakes at Monmouth. And I told Joe Bravo, it was July 1st, same day as the Suburban, and I needed riders for two good horses. So I asked Bravo to ride him, and I told him he might be only 80% fit. You know, don't beat him up in his first start for us in a long time. He went 108 flat and won by about five. He never moved on him. Wow. We skipped the Amsterdam and went to the King's Bishop, and he won easy. So he was a very fast, talented horse and was great to train for the Sheikh Rashid bin Muhammad, who's no longer with us anymore. He loved the game, and we miss him.
Well, you have those situations when you have as many horses as you do where you need to find guys to ride, and you know, what's involved in that? Is it just like a gut feeling, like you got a guy that's been riding a horse all the time and now you got to switch to somebody else?
Yeah, it's interesting. We have to switch sometimes up here too. I don't worry too much about it because there's 12 Hall of Fame riders sitting in that room, so often one's available. And but then once you get Paco Lopez on Dickinson and he wins a grade one, we don't take him off. So we're happy to have him stay with him. We don't have to change riders. Every now and then we have to change. In a cavorting, we had to change a couple of times because of other fillies taking our jock. But it's usually the horses, the most of it, and if you have the best horse, the jockeys will win on them.
Look back on Alpha's win in the Traverse Stakes right here at Saratoga.
It was a great win. I thought we got there. Then I thought we were second, and then we stood on the steps, Kenny McPeak and I. And it was, you know, great that it was a tie because we both thought we won, and we both thought we were second. So we both deserved the win, and it was a dead heat. And it's the huge race, the biggest race in the summer. Can't say in New York because of the Belmont and the Met Mile, but it was a great win, and it was great for a Darley homebred to win up here. We won a few grade ones that year, but that was a special win.
Kenny's another Lexington guy, so there's a bit of camaraderie there. He told us that he was happy that it was you that he deadheated with.
Yes, and I was happy. Same with, you know, the same, both of us being in Lexington and growing up. We were a year or two apart. I don't know if I'm older, maybe I'm older. But we went two different ways.
But you got more hair.
Yeah, right. We went two different ways, but we got there to dead heat in many different ways.
Created the new canoe, too.
Yeah, yes, exactly, right.
What are some of the other horses, when you think back on your career, that are going to stand out to you? Some of the ones we haven't talked about yet.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, way back with Wayne, Open Mind, and Dynaformer was a very difficult horse to train. I trained him most of the time for Wayne. And then cavorting was probably the best filly I ever trained, and she was here with Stone Street. She was special. It's Tricky was special filly. Invasor, the Cairo Princess, Soldat was a really nice horse. So it's so many, but it's a lot of fun to think back of. Flashy Bull winning a grade one for us with West Point, and Lear's Princess to have a grade one mare that's produced a tappet that we have. So there's a lot of memories that are great memories.
What about a horse you trained that nobody knows about, really? A horse that wasn't famous, but you did a great job.
Well, maybe one of the most fun part of it is Neil and I bought a horse off of Godolphin, Sheikh Maktoum at the time, for $2,800. That was ruled off. He wouldn't train. He wouldn't go in the gate. Called Nowras, N-O-W-R-A-S-S. And we bought him, and Bernie Dalton, who's a very good steeplechase jockey here right now, he helped us train him in the parking lot over at Oklahoma, trained him different ways, and we got him there. But the plan was to run in the Claiming Crown. So we bought a nomination for the Claiming Crown without having to pick the race or the horse's name for $100, like in February. And we had to get eligible. So he ran for 17.5 when we got him back to America, finished fourth. We ran him back for 35 on the turf, and he won. Ran him back for 60 on the turf, and he won. And then we went to Parks for the Claiming Crown, and he was even money, and he won by 5. So we did real well with him, and not many people would know that story, but he actually ran back in Dubai for $5 million. He didn't do any good, probably best that he didn't. I kept my job. But he was a fun for
That's
Neil
really
and
cool.
I.
Yeah, That's very cool.
A good story.
He's trainer Kieran McLaughlin. He has been our guest over the course of the past hour here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Kieran, we like to end the program by asking trainers to tell our listeners something that they may not know about them. So we have this little game we're going to play. It is called Five Fast Facts to Know About Kieran McLaughlin. So I'm going to ask you five questions. You'll answer them real quick, okay? Favorite flavor of ice cream?
Vanilla.
Oh, come on. Really?
Pralines and cream. Pralines and cream.
You can do better than that. I know. Favorite movie?
Rounders.
You can have one meal. What's it going to be?
I guess a big steak.
Good man.
Yeah.
Favorite, I think I know the answer to this one. Favorite sports team?
It has to be the New York Knicks, but they're not great. So professional, that is, right? Or just any
sports
okay,
team.
Then UK basketball.
Yeah, I kind of thought that was where you're going to go.
Yeah.
Complete this sentence for me. If I wasn't training horses, I would be.
And Jock's agent, again, it was a great job, and we did very well. And my favorite TV show is Family Feud. People wouldn't know. I love Family Feud.
Do you play along at home?
Yes. Watch 6 o'clock, 6:30 almost every night.
We have to get the McLaughlin family on Family
right.
Feud.
That would be pretty good.
Kieran, appreciate it, my friend. As always, you are the best. You've always given us plenty of time whenever we have asked, and I can't thank you enough. We can't do it without you, so thank you.
Yeah, thank you for all your support and doing what you do for our business.
Thanks. Really enjoyed the visit. JT, boy, was that fun.
Yeah, great. Absolutely awesome. I could do this every day.
All right. Don't forget, we are back next week with an all-new Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. You want to go to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out all of the podcasts of this program. You can stream us worldwide, horseracingradio.net. And, of course, you can tune in on Sirius XM Radio, Sirius 219 XM Channel 206. Don't forget, we're back with our Saturdays at Saratoga broadcast series presented by visitbarbados.org. That continues this Saturday, and we'll bring you coverage all the way up to the Breeders' Cup World Championships as we are your exclusive radio home of the Breeders' Cup. Been a lot of fun for our special guest, Kieran McLaughlin, for our producer, Lee Delapina, back in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios. For the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.